and welcome to Starter Set. My name is Ed Sylvester, this is
Sam Bradley,
and welcome to the show that takes you deeper into the pages of Dungeons and Dragons!
We're starting a new series today.
Yes, we are.
And we're really excited about it because it's been a long time in the making. And we're recording this kind of in the future, but also in the past. So, hey, what about the result of that recent sporting event? That was a shock or not a shock.
Boy, was it sports. That's right, ladies and gentlemen. New arc. But first, before we get into what that is and how that's all going to look, Sam, how the devil are you, my friend?
Very good. I've finished off that character that I'm going to put in your Strahd campaign, which I'm really excited about, actually. Can't wait for that. I'm playing a female half-elf, and I'm looking forward to that. Mercy Lavelle. She's a... what they call Vishanti. Is it Vishanti? No, she was... I feel like she was a female hip-hop star in the 90s. However, yes, Mercy Lavelle is one of the local travelling people in Barovia. So, yeah, I finished building that and sort of did a little bit of prep for the show, did some more writing on our spin-off series, which will be coming pretty soon, and I'm really excited about that. And, yeah, that's about it. How about you, my friend?
Ooh, what has Eddie been up to? I've been referring to myself in third person, primarily.
I bet he finds that annoying.
Do you know what? Everybody does. Anyway, my D&D week, what have I been up to? I have been doing some reading. So obviously, I'm running Curse of Strahd, which is exciting. I'm quite happy to be running a book campaign, ultimately because I haven't got the time. I haven't got the time to do a homebrew, and do you know what? It is actually just a little bit easier to be doing that. I've also, Samuel, I've been doing a lot of looking around on the interwebs for inspiration of things to kind of chuck into the campaign, how to run it, and all that sorts of things, as well as looking at sort of third-party inspirations, right? So Curse of Strahd. So I've been watching... Bram Stoker's been playing some Bloodborne.
Nice.
The classic Hugh Jackman Van Helsing. What a film that is, by the way. Can we just give that a bit of appreciation?
Give that the props. That's very underrated. He's great in that. What a good idea for him. I can't believe... I mean, I can believe they didn't make more. But also, I can't believe they didn't make more.
I think it was very much of its time. Which is just like, here's a weird action film. We're trying to do it and whatever. It's a little too long. But hey, I really enjoy that film.
His nerdy mate in that would go on to be in 300, wouldn't he?
Yeah, he's Faramir as well. A chance of Faramir, Captain of Gondor, to show his true...
Got it, yeah.
Colours? It's not colours, because and this is a D&D show. Like, we've got nerds who are screaming angry at their devices. Actually, I think you'll find...
Well, do you know what? We're talking about Gondor, and I've got a million horn jokes, so you got off lightly.
Yeah, that's true. Wicked. Anyway, let's crank into the show.
But first, ads, innit? A little bit of capitalism.
Oh, yeah.
Come on, let's drop it down. Friends of the show.
Bloop.
Looking for a Fallout audio drama? It's True Vault Escapades. That's right. Follow the death-defying adventures of Detective Walter Camry and his vault girl, Bunny, as they solve the wasteland's biggest mysteries. From the dramatic Texas prologue to the high-stakes world of New Vegas, Walter and Bunny risk it all to crack everything from murders, slaver syndicates, and corruption at the highest level in post-nuclear America. True Vault Escapades. It's a Fallout show with a detective twist. Look for True Vault Escapades wherever you get your podcasts.
Wonderful. Thank you, friends of the show, Robots Radio Network, for, you know, the whole inclusion
thing.
Nice to
have friends. Ed, Week Ascending.
Week Ascending is where we talk to our friends in the D&D world. This is a little mini arc of interviews where we have a conversation with various people within the D&D community who have certain points of influence in different areas, and basically talk to them about what they're doing in the D&D world, how they came to it, and, you know, all that delectable stuff in between those two bits of bread to make a wonderful sandwich interview.
We've got a really, really cool one to open this week with.
Ed, we do.
We are talking to Mike Shea. You better know him as Sly Flourish, DM's Tips. So I guess without further ado, here's the interview. Hope you enjoy it.
Mike, welcome. Thank you so much for coming on to the podcast, also known as Sly Flourish. Actually, that is a question that I wanted to ask you.
Sure.
Are you Sly Flourish, or how's that work? Mike.
Oh, that's complicated. That's some deep psychological...
Open and hard.
Yeah. I don't consider God, this is so weird. I don't consider myself Sly Flourish. Although I am often referred to it, and that's fine.
Right, okay.
But, you know, the website was called Sly Flourish, and it's the brand. But the reality is I'm the only one behind him, so...
Fine. Know. So yeah. You both are, and you
and
are not Sly
yeah.
Flourish.
Yeah, I try to disassociate the two. The main thing is, like, I don't want my personality to be injected in the stuff too much, right? Like, it's not...
Fair enough.
There's enough personality being injected in all this stuff, and, like, I just, you know, yeah, I don't know. complicated question.
Isn't it strange how some people, they do, maybe it's because there are a few sort of key figures that a lot of people know within the game. I think it's really interesting how things like,
right.
off the top of my head, like Mercer DM style, they just become shorthand for a few things.
Sure.
That's always really interested me.
Yeah, or company yep. names, right? Matt Colville mm-hmm. DM, MCDM, right? Is
yeah, exactly.
So his company is rated yeah, by right. him. So I'm not quite at that level, but the reality is there's only one, you know, there's only one man behind the curtain, behind the Sly Flourish, as I often refer to it, the Sly Flourish Empire. And I say that with, you know, all mm-hmm. sarcasm enhanced.
So, Mike, what was the triggering moment? The epiphany when you went, do you know what, this is the thing I want to do, this is what I'm going to create a blog about. When did that sort of trigger in your mind?
Sure. So that it happened in the earliest days of the fourth edition of D&D. I was playing 3.5 with my wife. We were married then. So right at the end of the 3.5 phase, we had sort of an irregular D&D 3.5 group that played, and there were lots of like bits about 3.5 that were driving me bananas. You know, a lot of like weird inconsistencies in how to do combat, and you know, I was kind of a combat focused DM, and that was, you know, the game sort of led that direction, and so I kind of fell in. But there was all these like weird odds and ends, things like confirming critical hits, like, you know, all these strange tidbits that are like, why is that there, right? Mm. Or half square movement on diagonals, right? And then it was also like, particularly at high level play, things were really complicated. Like people would spend like 20 minutes buffing themselves before they'd go into a fight, and everybody would have to remember the 7 or 8 buffs that they had on them. You know, and all your whole character, she's basically different. So I used to, for some of the players that like were kind of just in there to play and not really into the game, I made a separate character sheet for like, this is the buffed version of your character, this is the unbuffed version. And then later I just said, how about like the wizard and the cleric knocks off these 3 spell slots, and I'll just assume you have those buffs on all the time, and then we'll,
yeah, you know,
that will
sense.
Be the new balance of the game. So there's a bunch of weird stuff like that, a bunch of house rules. There was a bunch of weird books that came out, like the Book of 9 Swords. And there was another one, it was like Tome of Magic or something like that, but they had like all new ways to look at classes. So Book of 9 Swords was like, how do you make melee classes more like spellcasters? And obviously this was them dipping mm-hmm. their toe into fourth edition style. So then fourth edition came out and I was on board. Like there were a lot of people who were obviously not interested, right? That's a whole story.
Yeah, because the fourth edition obviously then goes very heavy into like, here's your rules, this is what you can do, these are your boundaries.
Yeah. And I really fell for that, right? I'm not fell for it like I got snookered, but fell for it like I really loved it, you know? And I liked it because the consistency was there across the board. Now it's like diagonals are 1 square, doesn't matter. You know, we don't care, right? Where there was some stuff they abstracted, like critical
yeah.
hit,
yeah.
you get a 20, you get a critical hit. You're like, oh, that's so refreshing, right? And yeah, and you had powers, you know? And for a lot of people, you can read about like that had never played D&D and they looked at how fourth edition worked and they dug it. Right, that like Mike Krahulik from Penny Arcade had never really played D&D, and Jerry Holcomb had, But for Mike, it was like, this is so much more straightforward to learn D&D when I have a bunch of cards in front of me. And I know that a card is a power, and it's sort of a pseudo Magic the Gathering style for D&D.
It's peculiar how I think, obviously what you were just saying about that move from 3.5 to 4, I think we're starting to see that now with 5e, and especially with the release of Tasha's. I think they're bringing it in. I read that, and obviously we've done a series of shows about a lot of the Tasha's playtest.
Yeah, yeah.
And I remember reading the book and thinking, this is 5.5. This looks like something they're going to lean into.
Yeah, 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 definitely. I never know how to refer to it, because it's like the world is always, you know, the future is never always exactly like the past. And so is it a 5.5? It's like, well, the monster manual is the same. Yeah. Like, lots of other aspects aren't really modified. So I don't, but yeah, there's certainly a lot of things that they had done in Tasha's that I think, and they've said it, right? Like they refer to it as new tech. So the idea of using proficiency bonuses as a key modifier for a lot of abilities. You know, I remember Dan Dillon talking about that the reason that you have proficiency bonus as a boost for these abilities is that they know exactly what your proficiency bonus will be at any given level. If they do attribute bonus, they don't really know if your attribute what your attribute bonus is going to be like. So a particular power could be very swingy if it's tied to attribute, where it's not as swingy if it's tied to proficiency bonus, right? It's pretty, they know almost exactly how that's going to scale across the levels.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Gives you the control of that character as you scope up within your leveling. That makes sense.
Yeah. So making my long story longer, right around the time that fourth edition came out, there was a D&D sponsored convention called Winter Fantasy, which is still around. It's no longer D&D sponsored. It's now its own entity. And it was in Washington, D.C., which is where I live. So my wife and I went down there, and they were announcing, I think it was the first time, they'd already announced 4th edition at Gen Con, but nobody had seen it. And then at Winter Fantasy, it was the first time you could play it. And this was right when, like, the iPhone was out. And I'm snapping pictures of the character sheets, and I'm like, this is really cool, right? And they never said anything like, don't take pictures and put them on the net. And I signed no non-disclosure agreement back then. So I'm like, this is great, right? Like, and I put up a Tumblr blog. Tumblr was a thing back then too. And you could start up a blog really easily. And so I started up a Tumblr blog, and I posted it, and it kind of, you know, it went viral at the time. And viral back then means tens of people read it, right? And so I was really, you know, it was really kind of cool that, like, people are, you know, it was on RPG.net, and they're like, oh, this guy wrote this blog, and, you know, and they were studying the sheets that I had posted. And I'm sure Wizards was wicked pissed off that I, you know, took the pictures of their character sheets, but I was like, they were like, you know, pieces of paper. They weren't, you know, it wasn't like I, you know, copied the player's handbook. It was like these sheets that they handed to us. So yeah, so a lot of people were kind of going back, and I was like, how do I play this? Like, how can I play it with just the stuff they've already released? Like, they hadn't even put anything out yet. And we tried, like, we had enough that I could sort of piece together. It's just like the old days where people only had one book and had to figure out, like, how do you play all of D&D when all you have is a Dungeon Master's Guide, right? And so we played a little, like, samples of it, and it was close enough to other games, like the D&D miniatures game that like D&D had a skirmisher war game kind of thing going at the time. And a lot of the rules that they picked up from 3.5 into 4E, you could see in the miniatures skirmish rules, right? And like squares for distance and everything like that.
Yeah.
And so when I saw the popularity of that, I was like, you know, wow, this would be I think I could do more with this, right? And I had listened to another podcast with two guys about, they're both sort of like Apple / productivity nerds. Jonathan Gruber, who does a podcast called The Talk Show, and Michael, what's his name? Merlin Mann, who did a bunch of productivity stuff. And I was listening to the two of them at a panel, and they were saying, like, how do you get to be a popular blogger? And they said, well, you don't want to write about Apple. Right, you don't want to write about a big topic. You don't want to be the guy that's writing about Star Wars. You don't want to be the guy that's writing about A New Hope. You want to be the guy that's writing about Jawas, right? And maybe not even all Jawas. Maybe only that one Jawa, right? In that one scene. And you want to be the go-to guy for that Jawa, so that in the world, no one knows more about that Jawa than you. And anytime that Jawa comes up, you're the guy that they bring in to talk about the Jawa.
It's kind of,
and
like,
I was like, okay, so
TikTok,
like,
isn't it?
Super narrowing your focus. Yeah, I guess. Yeah.
Like, so you get all these Star Wars lore accounts on TikTok, and it's like, hey, we're gonna talk to about, like, the 1,000-year history of the Sith, and that's the whole account.
That's the whole thing, right? Right. Exactly. Yeah. And so, right, that micro focus, right, of it. Mm. And you see it all the time. Like, YouTube wasn't a thing back then. You know, all the sort of stuff that we have today wasn't really a big deal back then. And it was all blogging, right? Like, blogging was the social network. And so I said, I'm not going to write about D&D. I'm not going to write just about 4th edition. I'm going to write about 4th edition dungeon mastering. Like, you know, specifically focus on how to be a better DM, you know, in dungeon. And it was already, like, well known that, like, the people who are really into this are DMs, typically. Like, people who are players are usually not the people who are buying everything and reading everything and studying everything. It's mostly DMs. So I was like, you know, and in my opinion, they're the one that need the most help, right? Yeah. So it's like, let's, if we help the DM will help the player. So it's like, you know, anything we can do to make their lives easier is making everyone's life easier. And so I said, I'm going to start that blog. And I'd already been blogging at a bunch of other things. I was big into the computer game EverQuest. And I'd already written for a bunch of blogs for EverQuest, and one blog in particular that I wrote for EverQuest. So I was used to, like, writing weekly articles, and I could keep up the pace and schedule. And I said, I'm going to write a weekly article about D&D. And Twitter also just started then, too. And I said, I'll also do a Twitter account that's just DM tips. And it'll be, like, one DM tip a day. You know, and I remember, like, my wife is like, are you really gonna be able to come up with a tip every day? And I'm like, yeah, I don't know, we'll see, you know, like, I'll give it a shot, you know. And turned out, like, it was like, am I gonna be done when there's like 40 of them, or maybe I could get 70? And now it's been 10 years, right? And so I've got thousands of them. And yeah, like, you can, you know, it's basically an unlimited game, which means you can have unlimited tips, right? There's always something that you can learn. And yeah, so that's how it all started. That was about 11 years ago. And so, you know, weekly articles every week for 11 years, and yeah, daily DM tips for 11 years too. So
that's certainly a hell of a back catalog to go through, to say the least.
It is. It's actually can be paralyzing, right? It can be too much stuff. Because, like, I just rebuilt the Sly Flourish home. So one thing I'm very proud of with Sly Flourish is it's, like, the most boring homepage for D&D stuff, right? Like, the only images on the front are covers of my books. Right. Yeah. And that's, you know, that's the only image I'll allow it. And I almost cut those this last, you know, I was like, what if it's just text? Like, what if it was one column text? You know? and I'm really close to that. Like, one day I might do that, because I'll have to check and see how many sales come in from the front page. But if it's low, I might kill those.
That's a question I really wanted to ask, was you have all these books, and I think for a lot of people, I think the step up from taking their homebrew or their project up is to, like, hey, shit, I should make my own book. How does that come around? Do you have connections? How was the first time you did that? Just out of interest.
Yeah, so the first book that I wrote, so there's a couple things. One is, like, I don't know. There's two facets of that I think are interesting. But the one was, like, okay, so when I wrote a book, I said, I want to write a book. There was a book that I had read at the time. It was like a self-helpy kind of book, and I really dug it. And it was a short book of very specific stuff. And I was like, okay, Sly Flourish is already focused on DM tips. Why don't I put that together in a book, and I'll come up with a really crazy name, like Sly Flourish's DM Tips. And that was the first book I put out, right? And it was really straightforward and small. It was completely self-published. It got good reviews for the content and terrible reviews for the format, because it was like a Word document that I turned into a PDF and published on Lulu and self, you know. So it was completely self-published, but it got me started, right? It was my first one. I did another one called Running Epic Tier Games, where I was like, let me narrow it even more. So it's like, it's not just about 4th edition D&D. It's not just for DMs. It's only for Epic Tier. So it's like just that 20 to 30 level that no one plays. I'll write a book about that, right? And it never was a big seller. But I was able to take the money that I got from DM tips and pour it into getting artwork and an actual, I don't know if Epic Tier had good design. I don't think I had yet, you know, actually started ponying up for a good page layout, because I didn't even know who to ask, right? And so I made that book. That was all pre-Kickstarter and everything like that. And then the third one was The Lazy Dungeon Master. That was my third one. And that one actually picked up and people liked it. And it really hit a thing. It was also right when the transition from 4th to 5th was out. So I kind of got in early on that and said, you know, and this is after 4 years of experience with 4th edition and 1 year running, you know, D&D Next before 5th edition had come out, and really changing my head around about, like, what matters when we're doing game prep. And so I spent a lot of time thinking about what matters. I surveyed a bunch of DMs. I interviewed a bunch of DMs, and I kind of brought it together and said, what's the minimum amount you need in order to be able to prepare a D&D game? And that one actually had a good page layout. It had nice artwork, and it still sells today. The other two, so I think Epic Tier is now available for free on my website. You can go and just download it, because nobody bought it. And DM Tips, I think it's still for sale. I don't know if I've given it away yet, and I really should. It's all fourth. It's like mostly fourth edition stuff, so it's pretty useless, you know, unless you're playing fourth now anyway. But you know, Lazy Dungeon Master picked up and worked well. So the answer to your question was, I just did it. Like no one gave me permission, and I didn't have to ask anybody's permission. I self-published them, right? And it's very much like the DMs Guild today, where you don't have to ask anybody to publish on the DMs Guild. You can just do it. It's a little different because DMs Guild, you know, the licensing on DMs Guild is different. But you don't have to pitch, right? And
yeah,
the thing that worked for me, and anybody who's like, well, how do I get started in this? You know, how does that work? It's different for everybody. And the way that so the interesting thing is WotC then reached out to me only after I had published all those books, right? And it was like, it didn't go the other way. I didn't get discovered, right? I was popular enough already that they couldn't help but hear about me eventually and be like, oh, this pain in the ass. Well, let's bring him in and see what he can do, right? And so I did a bunch of freelancing for Wizards for fourth edition. And then they changed their sort of freelance relationship after fifth. And I don't think I've done any work for them. I did some stuff for Dragon Plus, the magazine that they have. But I haven't done anything for Wizards overall since fifth edition has come out.
Yeah.
So your relationship with a company can ebb and flow, right? It's not like, hey, you're in and you're great. It's like all of a sudden it falls off, right? And
yeah,
they change and they bring. And that's great, right? Because like, the reality is you don't need them, right? Like the OGL is out there. DriveThruRPG is out there. You can, you know, you can self-publish. There's so many different publishing platforms now that, you know, you don't need anybody's permission to write this kind of stuff. So if you have your home campaign, the one thing on the home campaign I'll get you is like, you got to ask yourself, like, who else besides you actually cares? Right. And are you, is something that like no one wants to hear. And whenever I bring it up, my wife is like, oh, don't tell people this. Right. But the reality is like, you love it, and maybe if you're really lucky, your players love it. Not always, right? I'm pretty sure there are times where you have a big home campaign and everyone else's eyes is glazing over. But you're competing with Wolfgang Bauer's Midgard setting. Like, is that the competition you want to have lined up? And how do you think how do you think your thing is going to stand next to that, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It's tough. And I've talked to some people in the DMs Guild, and they're like, you know, they'll publish their own stuff. And then they'll publish something for Rime of the Frostmaiden, right? Like a supplement for Rime of the Frostmaiden. And they get 10 times the sales or more because people know Rime of the Frostmaiden, right? Because you're backing, so you're hitching yourself up to something that already exists and already has momentum instead of trying to get momentum for something that really everybody has, right? Like half of, you know, from the DMs that I've surveyed, half of them are running in their own campaign world, right? Half are running in a published setting and half are running in their own campaign world, roughly. This is somewhat dated, but it's from thousands of DMs I surveyed. And that means you're competing with the Forgotten Realms and Midgard and these other settings, which, by the way, if you look at how many of those settings are played, it tails off really quickly, right? Like there's like two or three big settings, and then you have settings where people have poured hundreds of thousands of dollars into the development of them and people still aren't playing them.
Yeah.
And then you've got everybody's independent setting. So you're competing with all of that, you know? So it's like one of those where like, I've said, like, I'm probably never doing the Sly Flourish game setting.
Yeah.
Right? Like, that's probably not something I'm going to write because I feel like that's well-covered ground and the competition is too strong, you know? But if I can find something else that slides in, you know?
Yeah.
It's probably too early to pitch my own book. But, like, for Fantastic Lairs, a book that myself and James Citricasso and Scott Fitzgerald Gray, James and Scott are both freelance for Wizards of the Coast for a while. And we put together a book of boss battles. And our goal was, like, you can put these in any campaign you're running. Right? Like, we don't expect, you know, we really sat down and said, who's going to use this and how are we going to help them? It wasn't about us, right? It wasn't about what we wanted to make. It was about...
You take your own ideas and your personal ego and your love of whatever you've done and go, right, let's take a step back, examine it properly and make sure that it actually provides something for other people, right?
Yeah, I would even flip that over and say, before you even bring any of your stuff in, you start with what do they need? Right. And this is what I ask all the time. I literally like ponder this when I'm out on walks. I'm like, what's the hard part of D&D right now? Right. Like, what are the things that DMs don't have and need that would help more games happen? Right. What are the,
so
where do people get tripped up?
Is this the reason why? Because remarkably, I've written out a huge page of questions, we've asked you one, and you've basically run through sort of eight of them, which is fantastic.
Yeah, I'm glad I'm anywhere close to the questions anyway.
Yeah, I mean, it makes it really easy for us. But with that, is that the reason why you've got your module guides? Because that is exactly what you're talking about in terms of here's something that you already know, and here's how I can help you figure that out.
Yeah.
With those module guides.
Yeah.
How do you actually approach that within a book? So you get, so presumably, I'm sure you've got some sort of inside backhand track to get a book.
I do not.
Oh, God damn it.
I go to my inside track is I go to my local game shop and I buy it.
That was me hoping that I could somehow extract that information.
Sorry.
To get.
Nope.
No, that's fine.
I know people who do, and I can tell you, it's as far as I can tell, it's random luck.
Right. Okay. Fair enough.
Yeah.
So you get a module through. I don't know, Rime of the Frost Maiden, you get that through, you get the book down, you put it in front of you. What's the first thing that you kind of do in that process, and how does that then come out into a full, here you go, step one to step 128?
Step one is play it and run it.
Okay.
So, and this is something I think is different than most play guides, and I'm not going to give people a bunch of crap for it, because like, we're all doing what we do, and you know, don't step on anyone else's, you know, work, but I don't feel like I can truly give good advice on an adventure till I've run it. And so my step one for those guides, like you'll notice there are no Rime of the Frost Maiden guides on Sly Flourish.
Yeah, I did see that was missing.
Yeah, it's been out for like 3 months, right? Mm-hmm. Or something like that. And there are none. I have just started my first article, and I'm waiting until I do my second session zero with my other group before I finish it. And that's just the session zero.
Yeah.
Right? And then my guides will come out as I've run them, which is why Descent into Avernus, which is like, what? Is that a year? It's more than a year.
Five months?
Yeah. My final Descent into Avernus article is coming out on Monday.
Yeah.
Right? So those guides are, you know, the guides are, mine are way late. You know, like I am not trying to hit a schedule of riding the hype train, which is probably one of the reasons why they never send me one, right? Is because they want lots of people to write about it this weekend. Mm. Right, they don't want an article a year from now about, hey, it's full of problems.
Yeah.
Right. That's not helping them.
I know you've written an article on playing D&D through Discord, right? And I think that's like one of your most favorite at the moment on the page.
It's one of my most popular articles.
Yeah.
In the past year.
Yeah. Now, bearing in mind that a lot of the people that we aim this podcast to is those who are, I would say, probably more casual players who just want to have a good time. Drink a little too much while they're rolling dice and just see their friends. Yep. Obviously, we can't do that kind of experience now. Can you just basically like give us the whistle top? Here's like 3.5 minutes, which is a real intense.
How's it been working so far?
Yeah, on just breaking down that article basically for people. Like,
sure. So I'd say. Yeah, the number one. So I really like Discord as a platform. I think it's a great platform for D&D. I've tried a few other ones, and probably not as much as I could have. But my experience seeing other people use it and hearing from other people that use it, and using it both as a player and as a DM, and using it with brand new people, and using it with people that are very experienced, is that it covers the bulk of what we need. And what we really need is a way to talk to each other, right? That's probably number one, is a group way of talking to each other. But it has these other features like a persistent text area and the ability to upload images and sort of all the functions that Discord has makes it a really good platform for playing D&D online. You know, a couple of my big tips are like, don't worry about sharing dice rolls, right? Like, there's so many tools that let you share dice rolls, and a lot of people get really concerned about it. Like, how do I, you know, like Roll20 has dice rolls in it. How do I get that in Beyond? Or sorry, in Discord. And there are ways. There's lots of ways. Like, you know, I think in that article I talk a lot about the Discord bot Avre, which can connect to D&D Beyond. So if you're using D&D Beyond for your character sheet stuff, you can pass your D&D Beyond character sheet stuff into Discord. And my experience in the past 9 months with it is that actually ends up slowing things down, and it doesn't really matter that much. So it's almost like I've started just rolling dice on my desk again. And I have players who roll the dice on their desk, and it goes perfectly fine. Mm-hmm. Like, none of us, we weren't cheating when we were at the game table before, because no one's looking over everyone's shoulder anyway. I can never see what their dice are on the other side of the table. So I don't need to see it. you know, if I don't want to. So one thing I've said is like every player is free to use as many or as few tools as they want to have the best experience, right? So I have one guy who doesn't have a computer and he runs Discord on his phone and he uses it just for audio. And then he's got his books and he's got his paper character sheet and his pencils and his dice. And that's how he plays. And then I've got other friends of mine on the same, I've got other friends that are on the same game who have voice modulators so that they can sound like a Warforged when they want to sound like a Warforged.
That is on a top level of preparedness that I really love.
Right, right. And we're all, yeah. So, you know, she's awesome. And she's got her stack of tools is huge, right? And she's got all of these things that she does. And she's using D&D Beyond. It's integrated with Discord through Avre. She's got macros set up for her various things. So when she wants to do her Eldritch Blasts, she can hit like one keystroke and fire off all her Eldritch Blasts with all the modifiers already wired in. So she's got everything wired and that works really well for her. So having a system and a tool that allows for that degree of flexibility, I find to be really useful. And you know, not I guess I've already been bashing other stuff. And I know, boy, this is like a super unpopular opinion. But like I've talked to a lot of people who use Roll20 and I've used Roll20 a lot. And it's a heavy, heavy tool.
Yeah.
And it's sort of an all or nothing tool where you gotta use all of it. Now, one major recent advantage, I think, is Beyond 20, this Chrome plugin. It's a Chrome and Firefox plugin that lets you roll from D&D Beyond and it will shoot into Roll20. And that means you don't have to have your entire character sheet over in Roll20.
Huh.
But I've still talked, so it's a very, very popular, very powerful way of integrating D&D Beyond with Roll20 that I think Roll20 probably hates, right? Because Roll20 wants you buying the player's handbook in Roll20. They don't want you buying it on D&D Beyond and using it all. But I've talked to both players and DMs and they're like, man, like it's such a hassle to use Roll20. But like just playing on Discord is fine. Mm. And then, you know, one other little modular thing I've sort of dropped in there is this very, very lightweight VTT called Owlbear Rodeo. So Owlbear Rodeo is all it is a VTT. All it is a tabletop with a grid and tokens. And it has no user accounts. You don't log into it. It doesn't take anything. It has no interconnection between your character sheet and the tokens. It's just a way to move tokens around on a map. And pretty universally, everybody that I've run it for has loved it, right?
Yeah.
Like, you know, I'm a big Theater of the Mind guy, so I try to use Theater of the Mind whenever I can. This is way longer than 3 minutes.
It's okay. Yeah, don't worry. I was being sort of...
I need to set a timer. So Albert Rodeo has filled that when we have a complicated battle with a lot of different monsters and positioning really matters, we can pull in Albert Rodeo. And like, it's fast enough. Like, I don't know anybody who's used Roll20 and has been able to do this. Where like, at the beginning of one of my games, one of the players said, hey, I'm really having a hard time understanding where everything is. We've got three different kinds of monsters. They're all over the place. It's a complicated environment. You're doing it in Theater of the Mind, but I'm barely hanging on to what's going on. Could you put it in a, you know, could we see it in a grid? And I said, yeah, hang on. And I threw the map and I did a fog of war and I put tokens on. It has a bunch of generic tokens that you can use for all different kinds of things. So I just dropped the generic tokens in, copied the URL, pasted it into Discord and said, there you go. And he's like, oh, great. And it was like, it was way shorter than this conversation, right? For me to be able to put a whole map together with tokens and get it to the players. And it's because it was this one thing just added on to the rest of what we already had.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So I think that style of like, you know, first thing is just play D&D. However you can play online, we're stuck at home. And I cannot, you know, I don't know if you noticed, but like on the Sly Flourish one, the article that's above the Discord one is that D&D can save your life. And it's because loneliness is deadly. And when we're stuck at home during pandemics, it's really important to get connected with people and you know, have a good excuse to get together with your friends and play games and drink beer and throw dice.
100%.
And so any method that people can do to get connected with them online and play D&D is good. It doesn't, you know, I'm not going to argue for one or the other. I'm not saying you shouldn't use Roll20. Those who use it love it. And I have many friends who do, you know, and the great, whatever they want to use is perfectly awesome. Just keep playing D&D. If you're looking for a suggestion, I really like Discord. And then if you're, you know, and then I like Discord plus these other things when needed. But yeah, the bulk is like, just get on and play
D&D. Just play D&D.
However you can do it.
Yeah.
Agreed.
Put that on a t-shirt.
Just play.
Yeah, exactly. Just play. That's kind of the approach, I think, to DMing as well. Just DM. Just do it. Don't worry about everything. It's
It's right. okay right. and taking that step across. Listen, yeah. Final question, and this is the blind date. I don't know. Hang on. If I say blind date, is that a reference that's completely yeah. lost on you?
No, I'm hoping we're thinking about the same thing. The blind date is when you are going to go on a date with somebody you've never met before, and you show up at a bar and you don't even
now
know what
see,
they look like.
In the UK, there was a TV show where yeah. two people would talk behind a screen, and then they would be like, number three, how would you kill a man with your bare hands? Well, I'd do it on a hot night on a beach with a blanket under the stars. And they're like, he's my guy. That's what blind date is in the UK.
Gotcha. I think there was a show. I don't think I ever saw it, but I think there was a show in the US.
The Love Match cool, or something fantastic. Like that.
yeah.
Yeah.
So that reference is lost on our US listeners, but that's good to know. That's good to kind of tick that box and make sure that's figured out. Anyway.
But now we know what it is. Yeah. Now I'm up.
Look. When you play, and when you're a player rather than a DM, and yeah. what's your class race combo? What's your go-to, this is the way I like to play, and these are the things I like to explore? Or are you just like different each time?
No. It's funny because last night we just started a campaign that a friend of mine is running, and it's my first time playing in a campaign in years.
Yeah.
I've played a lot of Adventures League and stuff like that, but I haven't played in a campaign. And I'm probably the fighter is my go-to. I happened upon half-orc because the area that we're in his world has a high orc population, and I thought it'd be kind of nice to be a half-orc and I could sort of get into the lore, mm-hmm. orc lore. But yeah, I like straightforward characters. I guess I'm a tad of a power gamer, but I don't like breaking it. So like I'm really bothered by the fact that I might end up getting Great Weapon Master. Mm-hmm. You know, because it's like yeah. it's so OP.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. yeah.
Is that the feat? Is yeah, the power attack feat, whatever the power attack mm-hmm. feat is for two handed.
This is the minus five plus ten, right?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And it's just so broken. And you know, but I'm like, oh god, my god, it would be so good, but I don't want to take it because I just don't want to be a dick, right? And like I've been on the side where I'm
Do
just
it.
Like, here's my big boss monster, boom, boom, it's dead.
Yeah, exactly. You know? I've had exactly the same experience where I've been doing the sharpshooter archer, which is exactly
yeah,
the same thing.
It's the only one that's worse than yeah. the other one is. I can do the same thing, but from range.
Yeah, exactly. And you're like, yeah. hey, is that? And you're like level. Yeah, especially if you take human variant and you take that as first level, yeah. and you're smashing out like 50 damage at like yeah. level 3, and your poor DM sitting there going, "What's going
yeah.
on?
What is? Yeah, like why is this so big?"
Yeah.
So I think I'm going to try. So I tend to go for simple characters, you know, and I love fighters in general. I like rogues a lot, you know, and so those are probably the kind of characters. I'm very excited about this character I'm playing though, because he's a half orc fighter archaeologist. Right,
Indiana
and so
Jones.
He's little spec. He's huge.
Yeah,
yeah. Right, Indiana Jones, but he's like this big dude, right? Because he's 18 strength. Our DM was very kind and gave us a standard array that's way higher than the normal standard
nice.
Array. So I have 18 strength at level one, but he has these little spectacles on, and he's so boring. So like they'll walk through, and he'll be like talking about this old architecture of this thing, and like which one of the you know orc clans from 3,000 years ago built it. And everyone's like, oh god, just shut up. Yeah. So I'm really excited. You know, to have this sort of erudite orc, half orc fighter.
Brilliant. That's a yeah, great it's image. It's that. It's actually taking. If we're going to go the Indiana Jones, it's taking Indiana Jones Senior. It's the Sean Connery
yes.
Indiana Jones, right? But
right.
just absolutely jacked. Just yes, look at this yeah. lovely yeah. Thing, and then yeah, smash.
Right. And no one can tell him to shut up.
I suddenly remember my Charlotte.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Exactly.
No
exactly.
one can tell him to shut up because he's got such a big boost on his strength. It's like, oh, are you going to make me? Just so we're
yeah.
clear.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
yeah. Brilliant.
I also have a phobia of spiders, which is great. That's like, that's my snakes and rats problem. You know, as
excellent
as spider. I love exploring old caves, and I totally freak out at spiders. Yeah.
Perfect. Listen, Mike, thank you so much for coming onto the podcast.
Yeah. Thank you for
really,
having
really
me.
Really appreciate it. Listeners, I'm sure you've probably, if you've ever typed Dungeons and Dragons into your Google search bar, you've seen Sly flourish without a doubt. But you know, if you haven't, I don't know where you've been. Are you living under a rock? Have you got no internet connection? If you do, well, you know, you're not listening to this, really, are you? Because let's be fair, it's probably a downloaded element. Anyway, Mike, thank you so much for coming.
Cheers, man.
Listeners, go listen to read Sly Flourish's blogs. You've got what? Discord. You've got podcasts. You've got YouTube.
Yeah,
all of that stuff.
Yeah.
All out there.
Yeah. Go to slyflourish.com, and everything else is linked off that front.
Amazing. Yeah. Perfect.
Anything else you would want.
Thanks so much for coming on, Mike.
Sure. Thank you very much for having me. It's a great pleasure.
Amazing. I think Mike has honestly forgotten more about D&D than I have ever experienced, if I'm going to be complete. 30 years of playing the game, man. His knowledge is literally slightly most of my age, of the entire time that I've been alive. It's amazing.
It was a lot of fun, though. We hope you enjoyed it. We really do. And as Ed said at the top of the show, we've got a few more coming up. No spoilers, but if you check the Instagram, the Twitter, the Facebook, you'll find out probably a little bit ahead of time of who we've got on.
Shall we tell them who we've got next week?
Ooh.
That might be quite nice. Go on, Sam. You tell them.
Okay, so next week, we are speaking to Jennifer Kretschmer, who is one of the writers on the brand new Wizards of the Coast D&D book, The Candlekeep Mysteries. And it's another great one. It's super informative. We've been sitting on it for a little while now. It's a really great interview. We had so much fun, and we can't wait for you all to hear it.
Perfect. Thank you, Sam. Lovely stuff. As always, you have been our listeners. Roll well, and we will see you next week. Goodbye.
Do you want to know what Ganga is for help? This man knows more than I've forgotten about D&D.
I actually think we need to re-establish who the Gangi are, because this joke has been running so long, it's been ages since we did our show. No?
No, do you know what? There are people saying it on Twitter.
Are there?
Genuinely.
Wow, I love that.
I know.
Well,
a person saying it on Twitter, and it isn't me or you, so...
Fantastic. Well, Sam, if that's the case, then yes, I would like to know what that is in Gangonic.
A Gangi! Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Hey.
Hi.
Do you enjoy being optimistic about bad movies?
Or do you enjoy at least trying to figure out where someone worked really hard on a bad movie?
Well, we've got the podcast for you. New to Robots Radio, we represent Fresh Tomatoes, the movie podcast.
Each week, we look at two movies that did really badly critically, but we try to find the good in them.
And we have segments such as What Could Have Saved It? And Would You Watch It Again?
If you're there on a Saturday night, you want to watch a bad movie, but you're not sure if it's like good bad or bad bad, or if you should even bother, give us a listen.
You can find us on Robots Radio, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and wherever else you listen to podcasts.
Please come and say hi. We love you already.
Goodbye.
Looking for an RPG podcast that isn't just D&D?
Roll to Cast is the answer.
No, wait, sorry. What games have we played so far?
Well, we've done Cyberpunk 2020.
What does it mean to have a voice?
And there's going
to
be something big coming, Chumba.
Hey, if you're listening, I won. I beat you. You suck.
There was a time when we were slamming things against our phones and...
Vampire the Masquerade.
Chloe? Sam?
You can't use those words!
He's going to grab Vincent, press him against the wall.
I mesmerize him.
This is Adelaide's Anarch movement.
First out of your chair, your hand goes to your gun and you draw.
Pulp Cthulhu.
Told you I had it.
Oh, we've all got the creeps going. I love it so much.
All right,
Screechy child. My favorite daughter.
Maybe after what we just seen, we're feeling a bit trigger happy.
And the new Cyberpunk Red.
Babe, you're good, but better.
Thought maybe you might be able to give me a counter off.
Dos Fidania.
Straight through his neck.
I don't see bone either, but I'm not gonna look.
My leg's fine.
I always knew you wanted to fly, kid. Come find me.
Roll to Cast.
R-O-L-E.
A new game every season.
Original music.
Original stories.
Interviews with the creators.
And delightful Aussie accents.
Listen to us on all good podcatchers.
Even support us on Patreon for bonus content.
That's Roll to Cast.
R-O-L-E.
Come discover a new world.